Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's going on, Comic Book Nation? Adam Barnhart here. Today we are talking with two Marvel legends in their own right. We have writer Brian Michael Bendis and we have artist Bill Sienkiewicz. And they're talking breaking into comics, their time in the industry, Moon Knight, more comics, more Moon Knight, total madness. Let's get to it.
Right. So, I feel they just want to talk about Moon Knight, though.
I'm having fun. We've already checked off all the boxes. We're talking TikTok. Okay, good. We're talking hype houses. We're talking even old school pornography ice cream and wrestling.
I'm sort of saving it all up. So this is where I get like the head spanking because I haven't seen the episodes yet. I've been debating, like I've been trying to see them all all at once.
So you are a binger,
but for everything I've. The response has been phenomenal.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. I'm building up to it. I'm very behind on a lot of shows.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think to be honest, the last time I think I was really, the New Mutants was sort of this protracted thing. I mean, I think I saw the movie and met with the cast and like we became like. The kind of family where you kind of get annoyed, like, you're hanging out so much. But I think when Legion happened, that was a whole big thing where I watched
right.
all the episodes and everything. But as excited as I am, I mean, I love Oscar Isaac, mm-hmm. and the fact that they seem to be running with, a lot of, Moon Knight for me, it's so interesting because once I finished my run on it, since it was so early on in my career, I didn't feel any real connection to it in the way that I did with the New Mutants, where I felt like I was kind of going through my artistic puberty along with the kids. I felt like the last 10 issues of Moon Knight, I felt like I started to understand more of what I wanted to try to accomplish. All the issues before that, I felt was a trial like through fire for Doug, to deal with the young kid. And it was just learning the ropes, about what I could or couldn't do. So I didn't have any real investment in it. I was proud of what I did, but I felt like it was one of those, it suffered from being the first project thing that I worked on as a pro professional. If I stayed on it for another 10 issues, I would have had like a half the run would have been like, like learning the ropes, and half would have been like, okay. Because Hit It for me was the sort of when I felt like I nailed what I wanted to do. But it's such a mutable character. I mean, what's interesting is that, once I finished up on it, it was like, I think Kevin Nolan, I think, cut his eye teeth on it, mm-hmm. as well. And then, you and Jeff Lemire and so many other people have sort of come in and put their stamp on it in a really indelible way. So it's not. Like the figure is the character is not engraved in stone, which I find fascinating. It's like it continually, grows and changes and mutates. And that's to me, that's really cool. I can't think of a lot of other characters that are like that.
No, because, at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Partly I think it's because it's always been considered not to me, but one of the like the B string, characters. Like it's not the Hulk or it's not Iron Man or Spider-Man or whatever. So I think that was one of the reasons when I did the New Mutants and turned down the X-Men, I wanted to work on something that wasn't going to be like taking their roles, like Marvel's Rolls Royce and driving it into the ditch. I said, I wanted something that was a little, under the radar. And
Mutants under the radar? Because I was at an age where that was bigger to me than X-Men. Like, it's funny that you perceived it as lesser. And when I,
well, when I was offered it, it was, but I felt like it certainly, if it wasn't maybe to the extent that I felt it was, it certainly wasn't the X-Men, you know, X-Men at that time was primo.
Totally. Like, no. Yeah.
And, you know, if even if New Mutants was number two, it was pretty far down the list.
Well, what you're describing to from my perspective and for a lot of people my age, it was watching you from afar on Moon Knight grow issue to issue, sometimes from the beginning of the issue to the end of the issue, something happened to you as an artist. I'm thinking Moon Knight 25 was one where I was like, well, and for a lot of readers, we had never seen anything like that before. We had never seen what you were doing with the voice you started with, which was definitely you were definitely in the continuity comics camp of things, right? And I had not met Neil Adams or the school you were coming from yet. So I'd seen it from you first. And that alone had blown me away. And then to watch the evolution happen through the character. And you also, it seemed at the time to be following the character's evolution as well. So you were growing as your understanding of the character was growing. And by the time you had gotten to the end of that run, mind blown. We'd never seen anything like it before. The newsprint could barely handle it. It was fantastic.
Well, thank you. Well, it's interesting you say that because I did start to feel like, even though the title says Moon Knight, I felt like I was working on a group title.
Yes. You know? Yeah.
But that's really, I mean, it was all a supporting cast. And that was what was fun about it, was kind of having all the characters acting and interacting. I mean, I felt that I particularly enjoyed doing a lot of stuff with Marlene.
I remember. And, yep.
You know, she really sort of felt like she grounded the series for me, because it kind of felt like it was about relationships at that point. You know, I don't think we even really went into any of the mental divergence issues. I think at that point, Moon Knight with Stephen Grant, Lockley and Mark Spector, I think it was just like a decision or a choice to have three, you know, fluid alter egos or secret identities. It was almost like a Mission Impossible kind of thing. It was expeditious kind of thing for him, as opposed to like what Chris and I eventually did with Legion. You know, I think that the idea of making it more about multiple personality, I thought that was, you know, when that happened, I was like, oh man, that's great. Cause I love, again, I'm big in terms of psychology and what drives people and motivates people. And that's a lot of what I find intriguing about, you know, being able to kind of put that into comic through subtext, you know. And I felt that, again, that's part of the mutability of the character, is that, you know.
Yep. But I couldn't help feel that the complexity of the character and the narrative, even at, you know, the more adventurous level that you guys were working on, but the character's information seemed to be inspiring you to take the chances that were evolving within you. Like, it was a great vehicle for you to try to push yourself into these directions, and like there was no going back. And then you went to New Mutants, and I remember like the fan reaction to New Mutants being us who went, wow, and other people going, what? It's not Bob McCloud. And then you wrote, and not saying it to, like, because you know how I feel about it, but we've all done stuff that it took a few moments for people to catch up. And that was for you a big one. And I remember in the introduction to the New Mutants Bears Saga trade paperback, you wrote this a little paragraph that stuck with me, where you said, you know, the whole time I was working on this, people were complaining to me that do it like your old stuff, make it like your old stuff.
Right.
And then you're like, ladies and gentlemen, this is my old stuff. And yeah. Do you remember writing that? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
I remember that ubiquity of that comment. It's like, you know, your old stuff was better, you know, yeah. Like, And then you realize as time inexorably marches forward, you know, it's like the new wave becomes the old guard, you know? And sort of, I felt like, okay, well, this is, you know, this is my old, this, that's exactly how I felt, you know?
But I loved it because I thought it perfectly said to someone, I'm evolving, sorry. And, yeah. But you said in such a gracious way, and it for, those of us who were like looking for our path or like, what do I do when I get on my path? That seemed to be like, and I know I'm talking for David Mack as well, like very a freeing thing to read. Like, oh, I'm allowed to evolve. I'm allowed that's part of it. Not only should I should celebrate it in the face of whatever, you know, I'm just going to be me.
Well, I think I agree with you. And I think that you and David, it's like, you know, there's a mutual sort of influence here in terms of, you know, being influenced by what you've done, is that I sort of feel that the generation that came before us, I think that a lot of them looked at it as a job. I think that I certainly feel like I was of the generation that fell in love with the medium as an art form and felt that it was capable of anything, you know, that it wasn't just simply, you know, guys and gals in tights, that it could be capable of handling fine art or music or film or any other kind of analogy that you want to throw at it. Maybe because it was sort of like the denigration that I remember when I read comic books, I mean, going, you know, and trying to meet girls and then try to impress them with comic books. It's almost like, you know, you read comic books, it's like, see ya, you know, it was, I loved them. I respected them. And I think that the internal mechanism in me was like, all right, well, I'm going to hopefully treat them with the kind of respect and do the work that I love to do. And hopefully if I change one person's mind about respecting them, you know, and maybe can kind of like walk in my shoes for just like one issue and say, oh, well, maybe there is something here, you know. But
isn't it amazing in our lifetime how much that has changed? I mean, I went to the bookstore last week, and Powell's here in Portland. It's the biggest bookstore, and their graphic novel section just for kids is enormous. It is huge. It didn't exist when I first moved here, and now it's like a giant part of the thing. And it's part of the language of how kids are taught. It's part of their curriculum now. Graphic novels are taught in school. I remember, like, when my kid was little, she got dinged for bringing a comic book to school, and it was one of mine. And they went from that to this. It's incredible, and I do think it's all the little moments of rebellion and you know, really just, you know, putting our foot down to go, no, comics are serious, from every walk of life all over the world, has pushed it in the right direction finally. And it's amazing to see. Like, I sound like a couple old guys, but you know,
remember,
it used to be like this.
Someday it's, you know, it's like, and lo and behold, here it is. Yep. You know,
but yeah, I have very clear memories of having very ignorant conversations with smart people about the medium. And now none of that happens anymore. All of it's all gone away. It's amazing now, but I want to go back to, because I have a very clear memory as far as your Moon Knight run goes, because there was the Moon Knight as it was printed in the monthly, but then once it hit the ground, I remember there was a Moon Knight special edition miniseries that came out where they basically reprinted everything on Baxter paper or white paper,
right?
At a higher price. They did it for a few things, like the Electra Saga had that as well, or and the Kree Skull War, and it was like almost a trade paperback, right? It was before,
right? Yes.
But what it allowed for art students like myself to see your work on white paper with full color printing, as opposed to the newsprint that could get very muddy for some of the things you were trying, like you and John Tottlebin were the ones that, once I saw your work on Baxter paper, I was like, oh my God, like it was.
Yeah. Well, Tottlebin, certainly. My God, it's like, you know, amazing, amazing work. Yeah. Well, you know, Moon Knight sort of, I remember when I went in to New York that one day. And again, I went back I decided I was going to put a portfolio together of DC characters because I didn't think I was good enough for Marvel. So I went up to DC with a bunch of characters. Vinnie Coletta saw my work. I mean, I walked up, had no appointment. And of course, in those days, or certainly, you know, when I went, was you could go and sit in the waiting area and you didn't need to leave your driver's license or a blood sample, you know, or get DNA swabbed or any of that other stuff. And nobody had to walk you through, you know. I mean, when Vinny finally saw me, he was the art director at the time. He looked at my work and he said, "I love your stuff." He goes, "We could use you, but you'll be out on the street in a couple of weeks because there was that implosion thing," which I still to this day don't really quite fathom. But he called up Neil Adams, and I walked over to see Neil, I think with Tony DeSpoto, one of Neil's friends or, you know, colleagues who worked at Continuity. Neil saw my work, sort of everybody gathered around as Neil critiqued my stuff. And then he called up Shooter. And Shooter, he said, like, "There's a kid I want you to see. The only problem is he draws like me." So I walked over to Marvel and was hired with a portfolio of DC characters, you know, which I don't recommend, you know.
But rewind a little bit, because this is the idea that, like, you are now showing your samples to Neil and that you were influenced by Neil at the time. And I say that just.
Oh, Neil, I own it. It's like I have no issue with it whatsoever. There's no cringe or twinge of anything. It's like I couldn't have done better in terms of decisions. Neil's been wonderful to me. It's like I know he's got a reputation. You know, he's got his own gravity field. You know,
but well, that's what I was going to ask. I have two things. Number one, a lot of us know the difference, even with your influence on Neil, even at a young age, there was a big difference between you and Neil, even in that phase of your career. So I'm just saying a lot of us could just see the influence for right, what it is. But to meet the source of your influence alone must have been like some out-of-body experience. And I was going to ask, because I've only met Neil as an elder statesman, and that's been in the interactions I've had with him have all been wonderful. But yes, the Neil of old, and I couldn't even imagine what it would have been like to show this work to him. And it was so nice, by the way, that he was so gracious in helping that and didn't see you as some kind of a threat or like a must destroy Bill. You know, that's amazing.
What that was all about. I mean, all I know is that, you know, I was in art school in Newark, studying fine art and illustration. And most of my friends were older, graduating. And I said, well, I've always loved comics. I knew I wanted to do them. And I figured I'd spend from beginning of May to beginning of June to work on a portfolio. And I put together like, I don't know, a dozen to 15 pages of like pinups and storytelling, pencils, inks, and the whole nine yards. And,
it was like Batman stuff. Like what was it?
A lot of Batman stuff. Yeah. Some JLA stuff, Penguin, Joker. I don't know if the Joker was up, but I know Wonder Woman. It was all of the sort of characters that Neil was really well known for. So yeah. I thought if I'm going to try to do it go in comics, I knew I had a real affinity for Neil's work. And I thought, well, I saw other guys getting work as a Neil, you know, quote, clone or imitator. And I thought, you know, if Mike Grell is getting work or other people are getting work, you know, I said, I might have a shot. And I thought, even if I go in and they give me a critique, or if they say, come back in a year or forget it, kid, you know, I would go back to school for my final year. So I felt like it was kind of an exploration, you know, to see what kind of response. I said, you know, on the best case scenario, it's they might give me a pinup to do. You know, yay, you know. And when I walked in with all of these characters, Moon Knight came up because Shooter even said to me, he goes, the character costumes don't matter. He said, it's obviously, you know, it's like you can draw, you can tell stories. He goes, you have some of Neil's like wonky character, like storytelling layouts. He said, but we'll fix that. he goes, and I think I could see, I mean, that whole day was a surreal experience for me. It's one of those movie kind of days for me, because I remember the train I took to Newark, because I lived way up in the country in Sussex County, farm country. I drove my VW to Dover. And this is, I think, even before Hubert had the school.
Oh, okay. And yeah, yeah. That's where the Hubert school was, Dover, New Jersey. Right.
Yeah. The train that I took to New York was one of those old, I mean, really old, like, trains with the kind of seats with the wick. It had wicker seats, and the seats would go back and forth. Like, if, you know, when you were going into New York, the conductor would go and he'd take all the tops of the seats and he'd push them, and they'd swivel so that if you were going back to Dover, he'd hit them and you'd end up, you know, so you're facing whichever way. You'd have to turn the whole train around, you know?
Right, right.
And everything that was in smoking car, everything was yellow. It's like, it was just this kind of like creaky old machine going into New York. And then when they hired me and they said, do you want to do a character called Moon Knight? I'm like, who's that? I didn't know who it was. And I think that it was Al Milgram. He said, well, it's like Batman, only good, you know? They said, we can give you a lot of work. Would you like to do that? And I thought, like, so you're offering me a job? And they said, well, yeah, it's like, we got plenty of work if you want it. And that's when they said that I would be doing a backup of, and I could see all the people in the background, from everybody from Rick Marshall to Ralph Macchio, sort of almost like trying to find something for me to work on. And I'm a newbie. I'm just in there like some country kid. And I was my idea of dressing up, everything I wore was in some way petroleum based. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, I had pants you could play chess on, you know, or checkers, like an Eiffel Tower tie, a brown, like, you know, polyester suit. And I mean, I got more crap. I mean, everybody, Al Milgram, not Al Milgram, but Alan Weiss came up to me at Continuity while Neil's showing my work. And literally everybody's gathered around and I'm just sort of standing there like, what do I do?
That's amazing.
You know?
Yeah. Cause no one, and what you're describing is no one actually goes, welcome to comics. Like no one actually like puts the flag down and says, you are now in comics. They just start giving you work and you go home and go, am I in comics now? Like no one actually announces it or gives you a proclamation. It's just you get work and you decide whether you're in comics.
I'm sorry.
No, I just said you get work and you go, oh, am I in comics now? Oh, okay.
Well, they gave me.
I think I broke in.
Script. But what was surreal about it was that the ride home for some reason I had, been a full day. Let's put it that way.
Sure.
And, on the ride home, I somehow had messed up the trains and I ended up on a commuter train, which was one of these Amtrak luxury liner kind of a thing. And all the people are dressed in business suits and they're reading New York Times. And I just remember sitting in the seat, like looking out the window to this. And it was one of those silent, it was pretty silent. And the sun is going down. It's like, because I'd been there pretty much all day bouncing from location to location. And I just remember sitting there and sucking it, like kind of trying to suck it all in, you know, and just like feel it. Because from the morning of going in on this rickety old smoky car to like being bounced around and then kind of having my life dream sort of realized. And then the ride home, it's like all it was missing was a soundtrack, you know? And I got back in and I remember telling my parents, like, well, I'm working for Marvel now. And my parents, God bless them, you know, they didn't, like, my mother, to the day she passed away, it's like, she had no idea what I did. It was like, she didn't, you know, I didn't have a real job. It was like, somehow I managed to like, you know, put food on the table and move out and get married and, you know, all of that. But my father wanted me to have a real job. You know, so he taught me electrical wiring, which came in handy for later issues of collaging and like with the New Mutants poster,
which I had in my room for a very long time. Very, very long time. Yep.
Did I know exactly you, did what you're you talking about. Find kitten paw prints on it? Did you ever see them? I don't know, because when I was working on that piece, I was letting it dry. This is after I'd gone through my divorce. And I remember working on that piece and letting it dry on the floor. And I remember hearing meowing, and I didn't have a cat. And I look and I see this kitten walking across the piece, and it's like with these white on the gesso and white paw prints. And my neighbor in the apartment building I lived in, a cat, apparently their cat could go down into the basement and climb up over the rafters and kind of come up through, you know. So, I mean, it's weird, the stuff that, you know, that sticks with.
Sure. You know, that's amazing.
But
that poster really did a number on me. Just at that age, I was in art school and that poster came out, and just all it said to me was anything is possible. Comics can be anything. That's what that poster meant to me.
That you mentioned, I want to ask you what your thoughts about motivation. Because, I mean, we all talk about, you know, aspirations and dreams. Like for me, my goal was to do comics. I didn't, like, everything else that happened, like with my career, has been kind of like an exercise in like a lot of gravy. And I'm very happy and proud of that. But for me, I realized that when I was getting a lot of heat from people who were saying he's a Neil Adams clone, he learned to draw from Neil Adams, ellipses, period. You know, I felt invisible, because when I grew up on the farm, there were no adults going around, you've really got to be true to yourself.
That's right.
You know, like that language was nowhere around. It was like, you know, it wasn't until like now.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
It's funny that I think about this as far as comics go as well. I'm not... like you and I grew up loving a lot of the same things and having like similar influences that took us down different paths, but with the inspiration of, yeah, do this and then do better than this. Like that's, you know, or right. Try to reach for something beyond your, what you've seen. And when I look at what's going on in comics right now, when you go to see, you know, the Captain Underpants, Dogman, Reyna, you know, what the language of what comics are to people right now, I'm so excited to what comics are going to come out of it. Like, I'm like, I look at the wall and I see the language of comics and I go, oh my God, wow, man, look what's going to come out of the people reading this stuff based on what came out of us.
Yeah.
Reading what we read. I can't wait for it.
I think that you are, you know, in the same evangelical frame of mind that, you know, I think most artists, like true artists, you know, like in a sense of the possibilities, you know. But when I was part of what I was going to ask you is that I remember part of my transition for the later issues was hearing over and over clone, clone, clone. And I remember feeling invisible and I felt hurt and kind of, you know, upset and even angry. And then because I had all of these sketchbooks and things that I'd learned in art school that I wanted to put into comics, abstract expressionism, sort of fashion kind of model distortions and, you know, and just playing with it, and was told repeatedly, that's not what comics are. You can't do that. And I remember I had a turning point where I went like, I'm either going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to tell comics my own way and tell the stories the way I want to, or I'm going to get out because I can't. Kind of like, I can't do this. I can't be something I'm not. But I remember specifically sitting down at some issue, like some of the Morpheus issues or Morbius, or yeah, Morpheus issues were the dreamscape, and like putting myself in the position of the characters. There was a winter landscape story. And I remember inhabiting that story. I felt like I did when I was a kid. I was living in the story. It was like I wasn't just drawing it. I was kind of a passenger. But I remember how angry, and that's what led, I think eventually led to Hit It, which was the power of anger and sort of disillusionment and sort of I'll show them, or not so much even I'll show them, but it's like being denied identity in a way. It's like, I know that anger was a big factor in me to like just throw out like all caution and just dive in. And I'm wondering if you ever had like an experience like, that you can relate to, that you can relay.
Yeah, well, differently, but yes. And I think all of us have that. There is that one little voice that like, oh, I'll show you. Okay. Right. Like you just need like almost a focused point to prove things. So yeah, I'm a little younger. So I walked like when I was making these choices for myself, or the choices were being made for me. So I have to make comics. You and Frank and Walt and George and John, and like it was a very creator focused time in comics, and all of you were like almost like crawling over each other to blow each other away, or that's how it felt to a fan, and everybody seemed like just inspired to do their best work, and that's the world I walked into, where like you have to try harder, you have to do better, you have everyone's doing it, like this is the place in pop culture where everyone's, you know, reaching for the stars. So if you're not going to do that, then go. So there was no other journey for me. It was follow your hero's path to do better. So I think about it often when I think about when you're in high school and you're on Moon Knight and Alan Moore's on Swamp Thing and Frank's on Daredevil and Walt's on Thor, I'm ruined. Like there's no, you know, that's the world I ventured into. And a lot of my peers, we found out we all felt the same way. We're all alone in our room going, well, shit, I better get good fast because look what's going on in comics. So yeah, that was.
I'm kind of, like I said, I was kind of envious, you know, that you came in like with the doors kind of, you know, being like that inviting. Because I do feel, you know, like it's a big tent, you know, jump in, the water's fine.
Well, it wasn't so much inviting as it was calling. Like I was drawn like so hard, and so I was going to art school. I was in I was in a fine art school, the Cleveland Institute of Art. And at the time, they had not wrapped their heads around what was going on in comics and graphic novels. And I remember like storming into class because on the cover of Print Magazine, you remember Print Magazine?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
All right. So cover of Print Magazine had a comics issue where they had decided, this quarterly publication had decided the most important thing going on in all of graphic design and print was happening in comics. And there was Mouse, and there was Love and Rockets, and all of the people who were making their statement at the late 80s and early 90s. And I brought it into class, and I put it down like, I'm right. Comics is the most important thing. And no one cared. And then they let me do independent study. But the voice you're talking about, it was all of like people not believing in comics. It was like, why would you do that? It was not understanding it, but like people like us, we fully understood it, like completely. Like all I can see is that this is the most exciting thing going on in all of things. So it was carrying on my way. And no one around me fully understanding why I was so drawn to this. Even my best friends were like, oh, okay, you're now an adult still doing this. Okay, let's see what happens. So it's fun now, of course, for my a lot of which are still my friends, to go, wow, that really worked out. You know, and because no one understood it at the time, like nobody. Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I found that, like, when after I started working, you know, professionally, and after like a decade or two, I found that my father had been like secretly collecting like all of my issues. You know,
that's cool.
It was one of those kind of things. But I think it's not unusual for, like you said, it's a calling. I keep thinking of the Arthur Miller line about, you know, playwriting chose him, that kind of a thing. And I certainly feel like that's what it was like. Because you have to, if you think about it, it's an unusual profession to sort of have a calling in, you know?
Yes, yes.
You know, do you want to tell, you know, stories? I mean, you could get into film, you could get into, you know, TV or whatever, you could do novels. And certainly, like, you know, people have done that. They, you know, it's a kind of a gateway into, you know, and it's not only a gateway, but it's also kind of a nexus. Especially right now, for so many, you know, different iterations of storytelling, because you can do anything. You could do people with capes. You can do, you know, straight romance stuff. You could do, you know, slice of life stuff. That's one of the things I loved about comics. It was that, especially in reading comic strips too, was that, you know, you could have Mary Worth, you know, like the elderly, like, lady with white hair, sort of, you know, getting into everybody's business. You could have Smokey Stover or Dondi, you know, all of these really cartoony characters next to Terry and the Pirates, you know, we're not talking about comic books mm-hmm. now, you know. And I just thought, this medium can do anything. I mean, from silly to slapstick to serious to Prince Valiant, which is just, you know, like, quote, historical, but certainly more romance like oriented. And it was like, for me, it was like, you know, just a meal, like just like totally. I've been for it. So, but I teach
here at Portland State, and I try to describe to the students that the feelings that you get reading a good or bad comic, you know, that you know, ascension that you feel when you read something that totally takes you over, and that depth feeling you feel when like someone just blows it and you've wasted your time, that as an author, that feeling is accentuated like a thousandfold. Like if you are somehow partly responsible for someone's excellent experience making a comic, that is just the most intimate, spiritual, almost religious feeling that you're gonna have. Like really feel like a connection to thing. And when you blow it, And you're the author of the crap that someone's mad about, it's as devastating to the soul. It's so much worse than reading it. And I do that to describe, like, this is what, like, that feeling you have reading comics, if you make them, that feeling is accentuated. Like, that's, and I think that's what you've discovered that early on, like, oh, making this is actually like a more potent version of this feeling that comics give me.
Yeah, that's totally accurate. It's you know, people have made analogies about comics being like film or like TV or whatever. And I sort of think of it more like theater, because to me, there's an immediacy to it in terms of connection. You know, it's really like a one-on-one thing. You can tell, I mean, the social media right now, in terms of getting immediate responses, I mean, obviously, you know, when we first started, it was like, you'd have to wait several months to find out whether people responded to it or whatever.
Can I pause you for a second? Because I remember quite a few things you said to me. You probably don't remember meeting me back then, but like 20 years ago, we had met at San Diego through David Mack, and I had embarrassed myself in some compliment to you that I'm still stuttering through, and you said, you know, it's so funny. When I was making those books, there was no social media, there was no, like, these conventions were few and far between, and we would get a couple of letters, like the letter column would be a couple of people would write. So you had no idea, like, everybody was just blown away by you. Like, you had no, you were just hoping it was working out, and then later, like years later, you found out that how influential the work was and how much it meant to everybody. And you said that it was really an eye opener. And I felt, as I went back to my very vibrant message board that night for my independent comic, I felt so gifted that I got to have an interaction with people almost in real time as things come out, and how amazing that must have felt to have almost a delayed response to a joke, followed by, I remembered, like, that week I heard Bill Murray talk about how hard it was to make film because you would tell a joke and have to wait about a year to get a laugh. Like it was a year to find out if it was funny. Right. Exactly. And I connected what you said to what Bill said, Bill Murray said, and applied it to how lucky we are that we get this interaction right away with everybody. Anyway, right. So thought I'd share that with you. These are moments that were really important to me that you don't even remember.
How much fun I had on the series that we did together. Yeah. I remember it felt like play, which to me is when it all kind of comes together, when it's just like everything is hitting on all the cylinders. It's almost like, because I'm sure you have had your experience where a little bit of like, it's like, you know, well, what teeth do I want to pull to get through this, you know? But when it all kind of sings, when it's like, because to me, it's like, there's never really been a sense of competition that I feel. More like that evangelism, but also, hey, we can all have fun, this much fun. So when I see what somebody else, it's almost like, you know, that it's more inspirational. I kind of get inspired by what somebody else is doing. And it's like, okay, you know, I want to try like to play with that emotion and bring it into what I'm doing. And it's like, and if more people come on board, what's the problem, you know?
Yeah. And on the other thing I remember from meeting you that time, and I really took away from this, and it was at San Diego, you were dressed better than everybody else at the show. You weren't overly dressed, but you were dressed better. And you were taking yourself and your appearance more seriously than most of our peers do on a daily basis. And I remember walking away saying to David, we have to dress better. No more t-shirts.
Part of that, and that's very kind of you to say, it's like, I think that I do feel that there is a, I don't want to say necessarily an obligation, but because early on when I was in my 20s, early 20s, and during the period when I was going through my divorce, it's not like a tale out of school. I mean, I've told it to other people in public forums before, but I was, you know, a heavy smoker, and also I was a big beer drinker, you know, and that's what I grew up with. So it was like, but I remember breaking my drawing hand. I wasn't an alcoholic, but I was a drunk. I was, I would drink a case of beer a day. Right. And when I broke my drawing hand, that was the wake up call for me. It was
doing
like,
what? Like hitting something or?
Well, I had become, my wife and I at the time, we'd come through a party, come back from a party in New York City. And I'd lost something. My grandfather had given me an heirloom. It might've been a bottle opener. I mean, you know, it was like sort of the Sienkiewicz drinking, you know, heirloom. But I remember really being upset with myself and being angry. And I hit the garage door, and it sort of like, it gave, it went like, you know, that kind of mm-hmm. thing. And my now ex, I mean, she passed away a couple of years ago, and may she rest in peace. But she said, in a very sort of snide way, she goes, "Do you feel better?" You know? And of course I didn't. And so I just remember turning around, and there was a cast iron trellis support. And I hit that. And I remember feeling something right here break. And I thought I just sprained it. But the doctor, when I went, I drew issues of Moon Knight. There's an issue of Moon Knight with scimitars in a dust storm on the cover. Inside, mm-hmm. he goes inside the Tomb of Khonshu. And there's a lot of like full page black, like very minimal line work, but a lot of black, like almost Alex Toth kind of thing. Those are the pages I inked when I pulled my cast off, and I had to draw. I drew it. So I drew, and I think I probably did more damage because I was determined to get the job done, even with a cast on. But I quit drinking after that. I quit smoking. I quit my marriage. I quit everything. And I thought, wow, if I'm going to be around to do what I love to do, this is a quote, a calling or whatever you want to have. It's like, not to describe too much to it in terms of any kind of spiritual thing, but I sort of felt like I'm going to put everything I have into this, and then I'm going to blow it by not taking care of myself just to the best extent that I can to be around to do this. And you and I both know many, many pros who sort of have suffered at the hands of their own personal demons. And in a way, it's like the sadness of it. Also, there's, for me, when I've seen it, there's also kind of a level of anger that it goes along with it. I don't know if it's judgment necessarily, but I sort of feel like, you know, like you're mutating or you're mauling the gift. It's like you're not honoring the calling, so to speak. And I know that sounds very sort of la-di-da, you know, and, but it's also, it's
angry. No, not at all. No.
I feel like, you know, you're also denying as a fan, it's like the selfish part of me is going like, you owe us. It's like, you've got such a gift. It's like, and to me, it's like, it's the distillation of Peter Parker's, you know, with great power comes great responsibility thing. I think I'm being buzzed because I have a 12:30 I have to do. So, okay. But I don't know what time.
Well, let me hit you with a couple things then before we wrap. You had mentioned early on this being alive to see your stuff adapted into other mediums. This is a privilege that we've been offered that is amazing because we both know that many of our heroes were not alive to see their stuff adapted. If you're so lucky to have stuff adapted and adapted well, to be alive and coherent and still in the game while it's going on is such a gift. And it went from being a gift to now it's all for granted, where you and I don't think ever will. Like, we're not only is it we get to see our stuff adapted, but you had mentioned, and I think I heard it in your voice, that it's the most challenging stuff is getting adapted. It's not the the fun beat 'em ups. It's the more psychologically challenging, in-depth look at humanity that's getting adapted. I had that with Jessica Jones as well. That was not, not created to be made into a TV show. So I they're going to adapt the stuff that I wasn't even thinking about that for. That's amazing.
Which is great. I think I love that.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
I remember being on the red carpet for Legion. And
yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
And someone said to me, like, did you ever think that, like, you know, Legion would be make it to the second season? And I said, you have to excuse me. I said, I'm sort of in awe that they let us do the comic book at all. Like, they, you know, it's like all of this other stuff you're talking about, like, did you ever, what do you think about this? It's like, no. They let us do the OG, you know, line art version and get away with what we were getting away with. So, I mean, like with you, it's with Jessica and, you know, and which was sort of like, you took the comic stuff and the superhero stuff and you sort of zigged and zagged with it and which was brilliant. You know, I mean, it was a great series.
Well, you know, thank you.
On Disney Plus.
I'm thrilled it lives to see another day, but I appreciate that what you said, but I wasn't fishing so much as trying to describe this very surreal thing that happens to a few of us where you're like you kind of just sit back and go, oh, okay, all right, what happens now? Like you put your energy out in the world and you get to watch it keep rolling down the hill. And
very surreal. And the other part, like, it feels like if someone had told, like, you know, 10-year-old me kind of a thing that, you know.
Oh, yeah, constantly.
Be like, constantly. Come on, you know. So, yeah. But again, don't you also feel that as wonderful and surreal as that as it is, that there is kind of an incentive to do more and to push more and to have more fun? And like, it's almost like I look at it as like the calling is sort of amplified, you know?
100%. Yes. Yeah. There's no other way to see it to me. And I'm because of that, I'm entering a new like kind of stage in my world where I'm literally just fully dedicated to new stuff and ideas. Set up to do that.
I can't wait.
Yeah. So yes, you feel like this enormous privilege has been dropped on you. And if you don't take full advantage of it, like our heroes did, like that's all of our heroes did that, at least tried.
Yes.
We recently try. I don't know what'll land either, but I didn't think any of this was going to land. So, right. So just, you know, you roll the dice and be my honest best self. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's amen. Amen. I mean, that's, you know.
And the other thing I want to point out to is that your evolution did not stop when you stopped, you know, looking at Neil's stuff. Your evolution continues to this day. And, you know, looking at the Moon Knight paintings that you posted on social the last couple of weeks have just been like awe-inspiring to me.
Thank you very much.
Just so beautiful. And watching just their existence torture so many of my friends. It's so wonderful. You continue to be an inspiration and a frustration to so many in comics. It is a delight to be part of. It really, really is.
Well, I appreciate that, no end, and likewise, my friend.
And before we hang up, too, you mentioned, you know, every decade, you and I get to do something together. You've honored me a couple of times, and I was to this day so happy that Daredevil End of Days was such a warm feeling for you, and that you brought it up yet again.
I'm so proud of that. It was just, it felt like. It's one of those projects that if we didn't do it, it would have had to have already like pre-existed. It was one of those things that it was, you know, I'm not big on destiny, but it sort of felt like it had to happen.
Bill, that means the world to us. Our whole goal with that project is to make you feel good. Like you've made us feel good. Like how do we just make Bill and Klaus feel the way they make us feel all day? And then at the end of it, that seemed to be the result. And it was just, that's about as like, that's what comics is all about. Like that this is why you collaborate. Like, and it was such a wonderful experience to have that with you. It really was. Well,
thank you very much. And it's entirely mutual. And I think that, you know, I know that with Klaus and David and, you know, when we've had some discussions on the, you know, we were all on the East Coast. The idea of actually going and doing another the next one. Cause I think there was some talk about,
Punisher End of Days was going to happen. Yeah. Then I left Marvel and I apologize for that.
But it was sort of like, we were all kind of on board. So I think, you know, I don't think that the ship has sailed on us doing something together.
I'm so happy to hear you say that anytime, but it's funny. Cause I wanted to do Punisher End of Days, that even after I left Marvel, I may have said aloud, can we still do that? No. Okay. Sorry. Like, once you leave,
I remember the sort of like behind the scenes mechanisms or whatever. But what was great was that it was almost like, we got to figure out a way to make this work, you know, cause I know Klaus.
I will say that of all the great moments you've given me in my life, and there are quite a few, you drawing those pages of cover just because you wanted to, like, and so people know me and David Mack do a creator-owned book called Cover, and it's about comics, and there's other comic book voices. And
congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you. David is killing on it, and he's directing. That's at HBO Max. And but you had seen the material, and you just drew a couple of pages in another artist's voice because you wanted to, and it was the most magical comics moment that you just dropped it on us. And I was like, it just is everything you'd ever want comics to be, is like someone you admire so much, just jumping in. And it was like, it felt like you grabbing a guitar and just jamming with us. Like, that's the best feeling.
That's what was so fun about it. And I may ask, you know, add like anytime, it would be my honor, pleasure. So.
Well, thank you. Well, now I'm gonna critique you. There's one thing you have to work on. I'll tell you what it is before we go. So you do these amazing portraits of people online, mostly when they pass away,
right?
And it's always in beautiful tribute. Every one of them, and they should be a coffee. He left. There should be a coffee table book of them. They're absolutely beautiful. But every once in a while, you will then do a portrait of someone who has not passed away. They're just someone you feel a lot of affinity for.
Right.
And then I go on Twitter, and because of my algorithm, I see your stuff very early. Like, it comes up and I go, oh my God, John Hamm died. And like, oh no, yeah, he just wanted to draw John Hamm today. I'm like, response is, oh my God. And so
I'm trying to negotiate that. I'm trying to figure out how to do it, because I know I've done
celebrations. You broke up. But
yeah, I have to figure out what to do. Yeah, it's very,
maybe like
very,
a different style.
Well, I think starting it with, like, as opposed to starting each one with RIP, it's like, you know, but even on some of the remembering birthday pieces, I've got to figure out something to do that will make it so that I don't, you know, because other people have said, you know, you've given me a heart attack today.
And okay, I'm not alone in this. Okay, good.
Yeah, no, not at all. Not at all. But
I was going to write you like last year about it. Like during the pandemic, I was like, no, someone's got to say something.
Anyway. Thank you. It's good to hear it from people, but it's also great to hear from people I respect, you know, as much as you do. So it's sort of like, okay, this is obviously something I need to really seriously address.
All right. Well, listen, Bill, I was so delighted to be offered to talk to you about this, your Moon Knight and everything else you've done. But I cannot tell you how formative your work on Moon Knight was to me, and watching your evolution in real time, and what it did to me as an art student, and what it did to me as a creator. And to here we are years later, and to know each other, and to be able to communicate to you how important it was.
Thank you
to me.
Really means a lot to me.
And I'm so glad you get to experience all this love as it happens to you.
See, that was an absolute blast. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Brian, for joining us today. Follow them on social media. You probably already do. Follow me on social media, Adam Barnhart. And if you're watching on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, comicbook.com, whatever, let us know in the comments or the mentions what creators you want to see next.